There'll be three of them today representing the U.S. Wheat Association, the American Soybean Association, and National Corn Growers. To show no favoritism, we're going to go by alphabetical. How's that? So we'll introduce Steve first. Steve Senske is the Chief Executive Officer of the American Soybean Association, a position that he's held since 1996. Prior to that, Steve has spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C., Associate Administrator and Acting Administrator of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 900-person Foreign Agricultural Service, and also Assistant to the Undersecretary of Agriculture. Steve is originally from southwestern Minnesota, grew up on a soybean and corn farm, received his bachelor's from South Dakota State University, and his master's in Melbourne, Australia. Would you please welcome Steve Senske?
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here with you today, and would like to just run through a little bit. We've been asked today to talk about some of the issues that are affecting each of our industries, and would like to do that. But before we start, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about the American Soybean Association, in case you don't know about us. We were founded in 1920, so we're now over 88 years strong. We're a membership, grassroots-driven organization. Our policy is set by soybean farmers, and we represent soybean farmers on policy issues both in Washington, D.C. and around the globe. Our mission is to increase market opportunities and value for U.S. soybean farmers. And we're working together. We work with our state soybean affiliates. And you can see those there in red, basically where you would expect everywhere where soybeans are grown there in the United States. And we have 26 state affiliates. Today, I'd like to talk to you about what we see as some of the key drivers that have been affecting the U.S. soybean industry and will likely continue to be affecting the global soy industry in the future. Those are biotechnology, world demand for protein and oil, the link to the fuel market, technology and sustainability, and then finally, want to say a few words about we were asked to say a few words, perhaps, on the impact of the current financial crisis. First of all, biotechnology. This, after going for about 14 years since we had our last biotech soybean introduced in the soybean industry, Roundup soybeans, we're going to have two new soybean biotech varieties that are going to be commercialized in 2009, and we have a full pipeline thereafter. This is a chart we put together that shows really almost one new biotech event coming to the soybean industry every year, looking out as far as you can see. Those in red are the agronomic traits, and those in green are the value-added traits. And that's going to be something that's going to be really affecting, going to be increasing our yields, going to be increasing disease resistance, as well as allowing us to improve our oils and our protein. Another major driver, of course, that's been affecting the soybean industry and we see continuing in the future is global demand for soybeans. And on this chart, in blue, is the line for soybeans. Corn is orange, cotton is red, and then green is rice, and black is wheat. And as you can see there, global demand since 1990 for soybeans has been rising at 2x that of corn and almost 4x that of wheat or rice. That is, of course, because people around the world have been improving their diets, which means more oil in their diets, and they want more meat. And that's very good for the soybean industry. We're going to be having huge increases in population. You guys know these figures as well. These are some projections about how many million more people will be on this planet in the year 2040 versus currently. And you just take a look. There in India, 536 million more people. You take a look, China, 124 million. And then 100 million more in Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nigeria. Even the United States, 88 million more people by the year 2040. At the bottom of the chart, you can also see where some of those nations are going to be declining. Japan, Russia, and Europe going down almost 50 million people by the year 2040. The population, the increases in population and the demand as people want to improve their diets, what does that mean? We believe that in the next 10 years, 10 years from now, we're going to likely need about 70 million metric tons more soybeans to supply to the world. That's about 2.6 billion bushels. And how does that compare? That means that we're looking at just a little bit about the size, a little bit less than what last year's soybean production was. We're adding a little bit more than Brazil currently produces. And that's in 10 years what we see that demand doing. And all of that means, of course, we're going to continue to have a big battle for land here in the United States. With the demand that I'm talking about, and I'm sure that Alan's going to talk about on wheat, and Fred talking about on the corn side. Another driver that we see affecting the soy industry is, of course, the link to the fuel market. And this is a U.S. biodiesel production. This one is in million liters, but it's about 500 million gallons in 2008 that were produced. And we have that link there. You can see this is on a global basis, on the global use of soybean oil. And you can see in red is the industrial use versus the food use. And you can see that it's still a very small share, but yet it is significant. And that link to the fuel market you can is pretty well demonstrated right here. On the top line is the soybean oil price, and on the bottom line is the crude oil price. And we've been very well correlated there, as you can see. Finally, I'd like to say a role on technology, too. We see in, playing a role in sustainability. We think that this will continue to be an important issue, even more so as we look into the future. One of the reasons, of course, is because current arable land is very much limited. We're going to be losing uses of land to urbanization and desertification. We can expand our production by either clearing the rainforest and other vulnerable areas, or we can try to use technology offered by your companies, technology offered by others in the agriculture industry to increase yields and productivity. And there really is no other solution other than just eating less meat. Here you can see some of the deforestation of oil palms in Indonesia and also clearing of land in the Amazon for soybean production. Finally, I want to say a few words about the impacts of the financial crisis. What do we see? Of course, we're struggling and looking to try to find, figure this out just like all of you are. But a few observations. Number one, we've seen that global demand, we think, is going to be hit fairly hard by the current financial crisis. Lower meat and poultry consumption as a result of this around the world. We're already seeing that internationally in some of the meal trade, and also we're seeing that here domestically as well. And you've seen the financial performance of some of our companies such as Pilgrim's Pride or Tyson's. We also think that there could be this next year, we aren't hearing a whole lot about this yet, but there could be some farmer financing challenges. Now, agriculture is doing much better than the rest of the economy, and so that should help it. But the fact that that we have a 30 to 35% increase in your variable costs at a time when prices have plummeted significantly will have an impact. Soybean prices are down about 41% from their high that they were in July. Another question that we have, and we had seen this already last year, and we wonder how much more that we're going to see this year, are elevators going to be offering deferred bids to farmers in the face of the uncertain financial markets that we have, the availability of credit, and then just the uncertainty about facing some fairly large margin calls. And then a final, this is a question which we don't know the answer to, but our land prices set to decline with some of the investors rushing, moving to sell land to because of the cash that they need, as well as to try to take advantage of today's current capital gains tax rates. That's a question that we have, and I think something for us to keep our eye on. Last, this is just a slide that we had produced in membership, If You Believe, Belong, telling soybean farmers that while they can't always be in Washington representing and looking out for their interest, ASA can. With that, I'll turn it back to Dick. Thank you. Great job.
Steve. I'd like to now introduce Fred Stimme, who is Vice President of Marketing for the National Corn Growers Association. Fred is a 12-member team. They're responsible for communications, fundraising, industry relations, training, membership services, and meeting with folks like us. Prior to joining the NCGA, Fred was on staff at the Missouri Corn Growers, grew up on a family farm near Herman, Missouri, is a Mizzou grad. Welcome, please, Fred Stimme.
Thank you, Dick. Can't start a presentation on trends in commodities without giving the current prices on the Chicago Board of Trade. If you're like me, grew up on a farm, you sit in a meeting like this, you want to know what's happening. So corn is up 10 and 3 quarters at 438 and a quarter. The nearby soy contract is 980, up 16 even. And wheat on the Chicago Board of Trade is down 3 and a quarter, 604 and 3 quarters. That out of the way. No, I won't claim credit for those prices, Alan. Let's see. Get it going in the right direction. So where are we heading? We have a bright future, but before we look forward and talk about some of the amazing yields we expect to see in corn over the next 10, 15, 20 years, it's helpful to take a look back and how we have made the unimaginable possible. Today's reality, we do have the technology in place, biotech, precision farming, and other technologies that will allow us over the future to have a significant boost in corn production. From the demand side, we see only slight growth in food and feed uses here in the United States. So that opens up a tremendous opportunity for corn farmers. We can continue to build new markets while at the same time meeting the needs of our existing customers, livestock, our humans here in the United States, as well as the export markets, and we can do so in a sustainable manner. And again, looking back to look forward, who would have imagined 60 years ago that today we could produce on the same number of acres, 85 million acres, nearly fourfold the size of crop. We went from about 3 billion bushel up to 13 billion bushel last year, from yield from 33 bushel an acre up to 151. Obviously, biotechnology plays a huge role in this, and that's why we would encourage many of you, as you look at trends going forward, take a look at the 10-year yield trend, not necessarily the 15, 30, 35 that's reported by USDA. On this projection, the 10-year yield trend, we're pushing almost 180 bushels per acre by 2015. Some of the seed technology companies will tell you that by 2030, we can produce, on an average basis across the United States, 300 bushels per acre through marker-assisted breeding, biotechnology, and we now have the corn genome mapped. We're in the process of sequencing. And obviously, is that possible? Well, it's here today. Almost 5,000 participants in the National Corn Yield Contest last year averaged almost 70 bushels per acre above the national average. And our 27 national yield winners, almost 300 bushel per acre. So it's happening today. At the same time, obviously, it's been talked about more than once today, ethanol, but as a group of equipment manufacturers, I think you all will forgive me if I decide to plow the same ground once again. Production is going to increase for corn. There's also tremendous new technology in terms of converting the starch in corn to ethanol. By 2015, we're going to be close to 600 gallons per acre. We've obviously made tremendous growth over the last 5 years. Pioneer has estimated that by 2020, we may be producing over 1,000 gallons of ethanol per acre. At the same time, most of you know that corn, you only use the starch portion of the corn to make ethanol. Protein, minerals, fats, oils remain as a high-protein, high-quality livestock feed. That's one of the things that's going to help us to continue to meet the needs of our livestock and poultry customers. If you look out to 2015, our total corn supply will be a little bit over 17 million bushel. Of that, we'll use about 3 billion bushel to produce 15 billion gallons of ethanol. And if that 15 number sounds familiar to you, one of the visions that the National Corn Board set forward in 2003-2004 was a vision for 2015. And they said by 2015 we'll produce over 15 billion bushel of corn and produce over 15 billion gallons of ethanol. Well, as you know, I think Dr. Ryder mentioned earlier, last year Congress passed the energy bill, and that included that blueprint, 15 billion gallons of ethanol from corn by 2015. At the same time, we'll meet the needs of the rest of the users. We'll have nearly 14 billion bushels of corn for our other customers, and that's increased nearly 4 billion bushels from 2002. So once and for all, let's put the food versus fuel argument to rest. What about food prices? I won't go too far over the same ground. I think Terry did a great job of dispelling the myths earlier. If you don't believe him, don't believe me. Believe USDA, the Federal Reserve, Texas A&M, a multitude of independent consultants. If you look at what's happened in food prices, obviously energy is a big driver of what's happened in prices. And those numbers, just in case you're skeptical, I was when I first saw them. I believe they were DOE numbers, annual estimates pulled back earlier this week. So obviously those are going to come down slightly. And for our customers, not necessarily good news for corn growers, but for our customers, yes, they're over the hump. At the same time, as we look forward, obviously environmental concerns, environmental interests of the public is going to have a tremendous impact on our business. Fortunately, we have a great story to tell. Pesticide use is down. The amount of nitrogen to produce one bushel of corn is going down. We're under a unit of nitrogen to produce a bushel of corn. Soil conservation up, no-till. And at the same time, we're protecting the soil. So summing up, going forward, obviously we're going to produce more corn, help reduce our dependence on foreign oil by producing more ethanol. We're going to meet the needs of all of our customers and do so in an environmentally friendly manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. You get the selection of the next seat, and Alan, who I'll introduce shortly, you're going to get what's left. I was sitting there thinking, Fred, with that extraordinary projection on corn yields, and thank you for the good news on corn prices hopefully bottoming out and growing. It's rather interesting. Krause Company has been telling farmers who produce 300 bushels per acre of corn, it's because they're using our combo primary tillage tool called a dominator. That's the only pitch I'll get in there. All right, let's move along. Alan Tracy is president of the U.S. Wheat Association. Alan directs the group's global export market development program and very much is interested in increasing wheat consumption in U.S. markets and in more than 100 countries they serve. Alan came to the U.S. Wheat Association in 1997 after serving 7 years as the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, and also has worked in D.C. as the White House Special Assistant to the President for Agricultural Trade and Food Assistance. There's more information on his bio, but I also will include from 1970 to 1981, he worked on the family farm in Wisconsin, Badgers, as long as I talked football earlier, and was president of that business from 1976 to 81. A graduate of Cornell University, most here probably wouldn't know, that's in Ithaca, New York. about 40 miles from where I went to school, that'll leave you guessing, and has a master's degree in international business from the University of Wisconsin. Please welcome Ellen Tracy.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be with you. I want to thank Dick for the introduction, Doug and others for the invitation to come. It's really a great pleasure. I was on your program once a few years ago in Chicago and enjoyed that very much as well. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about what U.S. Wheat is. We are the market development arm of the wheat industry. Those of you that are more familiar with corn or are familiar with the division between the corn growers and the Feed Grains Council, we are the direct parallel to the Feed Grains Council. I did have Wheat Matters up there. That's both a title and a sentence, a complete sentence with a subject and a verb that stands on its own. And wheat tends to get a little short shrift. We've been losing acreage to corn and beans in the United States. But I do have to tell my two colleagues up here, remind them that mine is the only product out of the three that is mentioned in the Lord's Prayer. So I did leave for some of you a little, our newest annual report, hot off the presses here on U.S. Wheat Associates, if any of you are interested in taking that along to read it. We have 18 offices in the world, 16 of them outside of the United States, and the various locations listed there. And we essentially provide service before and after the sale. That's the way our friends in the export market industry themselves refer to it. There are a lot of wheat acres to work, and if you sell equipment, it is not the bushelage, it's the acres that tends to count. If you look at the United States here, you see that we are not quite up there with corn and soybeans, but darn close in terms of total acreage. If you look at the world, however, we are the largest crop of the major grains. This is just the five major, or the four major grains plus cotton in this slide. Where is it grown? We don't dominate the world wheat production picture like we do for corn. We are the largest exporter, but we are not the largest producer. That as a country goes to China. And I just wanted to point out that the Black Sea have lumped Kazakhstan, Ukraine, and Russia together there, and together they are now exceed us in wheat production. I'm going to return to them. But below that are most of the major exporters. We have about 30% of world trade. We've had an amazing run-up in prices. We led that. We started the beginning of last summer with our increase well before corn and soybeans took off. Peaked about last January or February, depending on which class of wheat you were talking about. And there were some very solid, basic reasons for that. I think one of the key ones was quite fundamental, and that is that you talked about stocks here. Here was the production in the blue bars globally was lower than consumption for a period there, 7 of 8 years, actually, if you look just up until last year. And, of course, we got a pretty good price response this last year. But there were a lot of other things going on. We just come off of 2 years of drought in Australia. We had drought in the southern plains. We had, of course, China and India's growth has already been mentioned, and the pull that they made for livestock, and therefore the boost they gave to corn. We had corn and beans taking acreage away from wheat. The ethanol mandates, oil prices were up. Hedge funds had gotten into the market. The dollar was weakening. And then on top of all this, as things got tight, our competitors began to curb their exports. Most of the major competitors either didn't have a crop or found some way to restrict it so that the market had to absorb prices. The available supply had to absorb the supply-demand situation and reflect that in prices, which peaked out in the Minneapolis Grain Exchange at about $25 a bushel. Well, I would contend that that is indeed too much money per week. And I can say that because I don't know anybody that actually sold any at that price. But the net result is that despite all these factors, we have a basic supply-demand situation that is probably the most important. You know, our bloom is off now. We've had prices down for the last 6 months, down to about half of their highs. We've had big plantings, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. Of course, a big corn crop. The dollar has started to come back. And expenses are skyrocketing, and I think that's a really important factor in the long term. You know it, of course. Price of oil is reflected in the price of fertilizer, and the price of fuel that producers use, and even in the price of that wonderful machinery that they use. But here's what happens when the stocks go down, when you're using more than you're producing, world stocks go down, and the prices are a direct opposite of that, a direct reflection of that in the other direction. One of the things that we're looking at right now is what happens for a producer. This is a year ago, and this is a producer, a particular producer, Jay Griffith from Ohio. And these are his actual expenses to grow an acre of the three major crops, and looking at what he could contract for in September of 2007. Turns out his return to land and labor was pretty much a wash amongst those. So he added a lot of wheat, spread out his rotation, rather his workload, helped his land rotation, just kind of a nice way to do it. Look at where he is this September, backing off from the crop futures to the Toledo price. He ends up actually with a higher gross per acre than last year on wheat, but his expenses are up over 50%. And even though his expenses are also up 50% in corn, a not quite doubling of corn price means that the return to land and labor is now 2.5 times for wheat, for corn, as what it is for wheat. So guess what he's doing this year? He sure isn't planting a whole lot of wheat. And that is repeating itself in a lot of places. I think that we are looking at a new trading range ahead, that the new lows will reflect the old highs. It's happened before. Terry covered some of this, but we're looking at a range. I think currently the price in Chicago is around $6 a bushel. That's below cost of production. I think we're looking at prices that should be in the range of 6 to 9, but they have the potential to go higher than that again based on short-term factors, because we do have a very good basic situation underpinning that. Looking across the top of this chart, that's total world trade in wheat. And by the way, it's 1/3 of all grain trade is wheat trade in the world. It looks flat, but if you take out China and Russia, former Soviet Union countries, those that recently rediscovered some value to capitalism, and so therefore they're now producing most of their wheat, or in Russia's case, exporting it. Take them out of the picture, look at the rest of the world, just the blue bars, and you see a very steady underlying growth trend that's there and that is going to continue on into the future. That's positive, very positive news from the very basic demand side. On the supply side, just look at those wheat production costs. So USDA ERS just came out with production costs for next year at over $8. Like I just said, you can buy it for $6 right now. I'm going to go out and tell the wheat millers of the world that they should be buying it right now, because anytime you can buy something for below that you need for below its cost of production, you better get as much as you can right now. I don't think that's going to, one, I think that figure is a little too high, certainly as oil prices have come off since their calculations. But two, I think that we really can't go a whole lot lower in these grain prices and wheat prices, because the world needs the acres because of that demand picture we talked about. Just want to real quickly mention the Black Sea. We're very interested in it because of its potential as a competitor. This shows their Ukraine's purchases of U.S. agricultural equipment doubling in a four-year period from 2004 to 2008 to over $800 million. I can see why you guys are interested in that market as well. So we sent a research team over there to do a little work, and basically they're going to keep producing wheat for a while. These are temperature charts comparing some cities in the United States, Western Plains, to some cities in Russia and Ukraine. Really surprisingly similar. And from that standpoint, and then here's the rainfall. We're still a little higher rainfall in the summer. They're a little higher in the winter. But it's amazingly comparable. So in our view,
these countries should be producing, Ukraine in particular, should be producing corn and soybeans long run. You know, in the meantime, it's a lot easier for them to improve their wheat production, and they're going to do that, but they're going to be major competitors for the next several years. But longer run, I think they have the potential to producing corn and soybeans for use as livestock feed to create meat for the consumers in Russia and other nearby places. So I want to, and by the way, looking at that slightly lower rainfall, they ought to be producing some sorghum, and they're really not at this point in time. So whatever you can do to help us out here on this split between corn and bean acreage and ours, this would be a big help. Wheat is still the staff of life, very important grain worldwide, important part of total acreage, one that has to increase its margin over corn in order to get the acreage that we're going to need, because we are going to need more acreage. So the old models of wheat prices itself no lower than 10% above corn, I think that's got to change. We're looking at a $2 margin now, and I think we're going to see that much and more in the years ahead. So look forward to your questions.